Next case for argument is Paz versus Wakanda Healthcare, Ms. O'Malley.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, Counsel. May it please the Court. What makes this case most unusual is that there is a dispute as to plaintiff being terminated or abandoning her job. That is a direct quote from page one of the defendant's motion for summary judgment. In the lower court, defendant chose not to defend the actions of plaintiff's supervisor, Charlene Lee, and in that those actions were discriminatory and retaliatory. Indeed, most of the evidence of discrimination and retaliation came from the defendant itself in its answers and admissions in the record in this matter. Rather, the defendant asked the lower court to grant judgment in its favor as a matter of law and to summarily dispose of Ms. Paz's civil rights claims, largely on the sole grounds that, regardless of the ample evidence of discrimination and retaliation that exists in this record, that retaliation and discrimination is not actionable, because the defendant contends that there was no termination in this case. The district court was wrong, both in law and in fact, to accept defendant's invitation to resolve this factual dispute that, as defendant concedes, is at the very heart of this matter and very much in dispute. First, this court has repeatedly held that where there is a disputed material fact as to the employment status of a Title VII employment discrimination plaintiff, such that the dispute revolves around whether the adverse act occurred, was the plaintiff hired, was the plaintiff fired, that disputed fact must be resolved by only the trier of fact. Secondly, the district court's error is revealed plainly upon review of the court's reasoning under adverse act. In the court's opinion granting summary judgment, the court's analysis of adverse act was limited to exactly one half page of its opinion. In that half page, the district court neither cited to a single legal authority, nor did the district court cite to, reference, or even acknowledge the existence of one single piece of evidence that plaintiff submitted in corroboration of her claim of having been terminated. In this matter, the plaintiff testified that the day before she was terminated, the day that she complained of discrimination in the workplace, her supervisor, Charlene Lee, told her, "If you leave, don't come back." Plaintiff further testified that she did go back to work. She wanted to keep her job. She reported to work on October 25th, and that is corroborated by her time card in this evidence, which shows, in fact, that she reported at 6 a.m. for her regularly scheduled shift. Plaintiff further testified that upon reporting to work, she was met with Carla Janicek, a non-pregnant, non-Mexican woman who was performing her job. And plaintiff asked her, "Why are you doing my job?" At which time Carla Janicek told her she was performing her job at the instruction of Charlene Lee. That evidence is also corroborated by defendant's answers to interrogatories wherein they identified Carla Janicek as plaintiff's replacement in this case. Plaintiff further testified that upon learning that, she went to look at the schedule and found that she had been scratched off the schedule for that day, and that Carla Janicek was listed as the cook for that day and the next scheduled shift, and additionally, that the next pay period's schedule was posted, and plaintiff herself was not given any hours and was taken off the schedule as a cook. That testimony is also corroborated by all three of the schedules that were produced in this matter and that were submitted to the district court for review, for which the district court never even mentioned. Plaintiff further testified that when her supervisor, Charlene Lee, reported for her shift, and she was a management employee who didn't come in until 8:30 in the morning, that a plaintiff confronted her and asked her, "Why am I off the schedule?" And Charlene Lee responded, "You're fired." That evidence is again corroborated by plaintiff's time card in this matter, which shows that she left work that day at 9:12 in the a.m., the timing of which corroborates that after her supervisor reported to work and she had that discussion, she packed her things and left. Her supervisor had fired her. The district court did not mention a single piece of that evidence in finding that no reasonable jury could find that there has been a termination in this case. Additionally, Your Honors, the court concluded its half-page analysis of the adverse act in this case by stating the evidence, quote, clearly indicates that Paz abandoned her job. That language in and of itself reveals the plain error of the district court in weighing the evidence, in fact disregarding the plaintiff's evidence, to render what is undeniably a factual conclusion about what the evidence indicates in this matter. The court's conclusion, factual conclusion, is indeed quite intriguing to the extent that the court found that the evidence revealed a job abandonment. The defendant's evidence in support of a job abandonment rests entirely on the testimony of Charlene Lee. And that is a credibility assessment that the court can't make. Additionally, Charlene Lee's credibility was undermined by the very witnesses the defendant offered in this case. Cheryl Morris, who's the vice president of operations, stated that Lee was not being truthful about material matters to this case. Not only that, Charlene Lee denied things that the defendant admitted to repeatedly with regard to the rampant discriminatory remarks she made about both Mexicans and pregnant workers. Additionally, Your Honors, the defendant did not even follow their own job abandonment policy when they purported to terminate Ms. Paz pursuant to that policy. The policy requires 3 days of being scheduled and not showing up and not calling for work. Each one of the defendant's witnesses was presented with the policy, and each one of those witnesses, including Charlene Lee and Cheryl Morris, conceded that the third day would be October 30th, and that is when a job abandonment would become effective. Nonetheless, Lee terminated Paz on October 28th, 2 days before a job abandonment could become effective by their own testimony and policy. And Lee is the only person who filled out that job abandonment termination form. Why did Lee do that prematurely? Because Lee knew that Paz would not be returning to work, because Lee is the person who fired her. It was wrong for the district court to render a factual finding in this case, particularly where the evidence not only does not overwhelmingly support the defense in this case, but in fact repeatedly undermines the defense in this case and corroborates the plaintiff's claims.
Okay, thank you, Ms. O'Malley. Ms. Coleman?
May it please the court. The defendant is arguing that there was a job abandonment as opposed to a termination in this case because the defendant is arguing that Charlene Lee had no actual authority to terminate Rosa Paz. And the district court agreed with that. Whether or not Lee had actual authority to terminate, the district court erred by not considering that a reasonable jury could still find a termination for two reasons. First, a jury could reasonably conclude that Lee acted with apparent authority when she told Paz that she was fired and sent her home. Second, a reasonable jury could find that Lee used her actual authority to change work schedules and assign hours in order to set Paz up and make it look as if she had abandoned her job. Paz testified that when she came to work on the 25th, she had been removed from the schedule, not only for the 24th and the 25th, also for the 28th, and that she had been assigned no hours for the 28th or for any subsequent day in the upcoming schedule. Despite this fact, despite the fact that Lee knew that she had removed Paz from the work schedules, Lee then turned around and lied to Cheryl Morris, saying for inexplicable reasons and without authority, Rosa Paz had left work on the 25th, and then she lied again on Monday the 28th and said, for inexplicable reasons, Rosa didn't come and she didn't even call. Well, there would have been no reason for her to come or to call if she knew that she had already been removed from the work schedule. There is abundant circumstantial evidence in this case to show that Lee acted because of either a discriminatory and or a retaliatory motive. Even if it's true that Morris might have overruled Lee and reinstated Paz if she had known the full story of what was going on, Title VII does not require a plaintiff to correct discrimination internally within a company. Once Lee engineered her dismissal based on discrimination and or retaliation, Rosa Paz had a claim. She could file a charge with the EEOC and proceed with her lawsuit There was no obligation to go back to the company time after time and say, please fix this. A reasonable jury could believe Paz's testimony in this case, and for that reason, the district court erred in awarding summary judgment. A jury could conclude that there was a termination and that the termination occurred for discriminatory and or retaliatory reasons. There's enough evidence here to defeat summary judgment. For this reason, the EEOC respectfully asks this court to reverse.
Thank you, Ms. Coleman. Mr. Pogrund?
Good morning, Your Honor.
Morning.
May it please the court, plaintiffs' litany of complaints about the workplace at Wakanda are not relevant, probative, or definitive enough to establish, number one, that she was terminated, and number two, that it was due to...
I find that a strange argument.
Yeah, didn't the defendant concede that the issue of whether she was fired or abandoned her job was a disputed issue of material fact?
No. In fact, what we said was it was a scintilla of evidence. The one scintilla of evidence that the plaintiff put forward in this case was that she said she was fired. There was nothing else to substantiate that.
Well, now, that why was, isn't that enough? I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, if you take a look in our brief, what we cited to as to what in fact occurred, I think it points very clearly that she abandoned her job. And if I can elaborate on what those are.
But the court has to look at the evidence in a light most favorable to Ms. Paz, and you look at some of these statements, I'm not going to hire any Mexicans as they cause too many problems. You look at the amount of corroboration that Ms. Paz had with respect to whether or not it was a firing or whether she abandoned her job. The fact that she came and clocked in and then left a few minutes later. Why aren't those sufficient facts to prevent summary judgment and for it to go to trial?
Because it was just that one statement that she made that she overheard or alleged that she was told she was terminated. But that's up against a blanket of evidence, that one thread that goes the other direction.
I don't understand that. If you testify that your supervisor said you were fired, mm-hmm. Well,
that's enough.
You're fired. That's strong evidence that you're fired. There may be a lot of other evidence against it, but that would be for a jury, right? I don't...
Well, again, the courts have held under the Matsushita case that a scintilla of evidence is not enough. But we can go further, Your Honors.
I don't understand
that's not
why
enough to
if
support
your supervisor tells you you're fired, why is that a scintilla of evidence? Why isn't that very strong evidence? Your supervisor tells you you're fired. The natural inference is that you're fired, so you leave.
All right, then for the indirect method of proof, then let me go to the next
What's
point.
What's indirect about it? I don't understand you. That's direct evidence that you were fired. Then the second question is, why were you fired? And there's a lot of evidence about that also. So I don't know what the district judge was doing. It doesn't seem like summary judgment. It's as if he were making, you know, Rule 52 findings.
And then when you look at the response to the plaintiff's 56-1 statements, the defense didn't respond in any way to 174 of the plaintiff's 56-1 statements. And some of those statements, you know, related directly to her job performance as well as the circumstances of her employment, you know, relating to the whole pregnancy business and telling her she had to get an abortion. And, I mean, there's no response to any of that.
Evidence only becomes meaningful in the light of the proper standard of law. If you look at the direct evidence approach that the plaintiff is claiming that they did here, it has to be contemporaneous. If there's a statement faced a stray workplace remark,
it doesn't have to be contemporaneous.
Well, according to the Geyer versus Medtronic and the McCarthy versus Kemper case, they held that it had to be contemporaneous, and also they held that it had to be made by the decision maker. In this case, it's clear that it was not contemporaneous.
That isn't true. None of those mm-hmm. things are true. The weight you give to evidence, of course, if it's mm-hmm. very remote, if it's years ago mm-hmm. and so on, it's by someone who has nothing to do, who is completely outside the chain of command, sure, then it can get little weight or zero weight. But if you're, as I say, if your supervisor says you're fired, and if she's overheard making all these hostile comments about pregnant women and about Mexicans and so on, well, that's evidence. That's enough mm-hmm. to get you past summary judgment without without getting into McDonnell Douglas.
I don't believe so. If Your Honors would take a look at the Venturelli case, which was cited by the EEOC as well as myself, the Venturelli case held that a non-decision maker's comments about new mothers and their desire to stay at home with their babies does not constitute direct evidence, and this supervisor was not a decision maker, and therefore that court upheld the summary judgment motion that was held in favor of the employer.
Well, if that's the only evidence, maybe, but there's a lot of evidence in this case.
I don't believe so. I believe that the only evidence that they have put forth are, number one, a statement.
Let's just stop with the termination question. Mm-hmm. If your supervisor says you're fired, isn't that enough evidence to get to a jury on the question whether you were fired or whether you quit?
I believe it's very questionable whether that's what happened here. You have to look at the facts as a whole here. The plaintiff in this case came the day before to her administrator and complained about the supervisor. She knew there was a chain of command, and she specifically came to the administrator and complained. What did she complain about? Not being fired. She complained the day before she alleged she was fired that she burnt the bacon and her supervisor yelled at her for this. In addition, she complained not about the abortion comment. She never complained about that, but she complained about a comment made in the summer of 2002 that there was a statement against Mexicans. Those are the only two things she said. At that time, her administrator, and this is uncontroverted, said to her, if you have any future problems with your supervisor, you come to me. The very next day, the plaintiff now alleges that she was told she was fired. She walked out the door. She didn't, in fact, talk to the administrator as she was told to do the day before. She didn't come to her and complain. Look, does it make sense that the plaintiff in this case would come to the administrator and complain about being yelled at and humiliated the day before, but when she was terminated, she would not come and complain? That makes no sense, and I think that's what the district court looked at as one of the very important facts here.
Yeah, but doesn't that speak then to evidence that the jury needs to weigh and not the court?
I don't believe so.
Whether the court would believe that or not believe that, I mean, there are disputed issues of fact all over this record.
But it's not that. It's really the one contested statement versus a huge mountain of evidence. What are the other things? The plaintiff admitted in her deposition that every job she had before and after, immediately before and immediately after, she abandoned her job. This was her modus operandi. I asked her what happened on the job before. She said, one day I got fed up working there, and I walked out the door. I said to her in the deposition, did you complain to anybody? Did you talk to your supervisor? She said, no, I didn't tell anybody. I just walked out the door. In addition, the job she had 9 months after this job, she had a nine-month job at another center, another healthcare center, and she worked there 9 months. One day she walked out the door. I said to her, did you talk to your supervisor before you walked out the door? She said, no. She said, I just simply left. This is her modus operandi. So when you look at that, in addition to knowing who the decision maker was, knowing that she complained the day before, knowing that now she didn't go before that decision maker, it doesn't stand to make sense. And I think that's why Judge Daryagian entered summary judgment in this case. Additionally, in this case, there's also the intentional infliction of emotional distress claim. And clearly, there are three elements to that. One is that it has to be truly extreme and outrageous. Two, the person doing it has to intend that the conduct would cause the intentional infliction of emotional distress. And three, it must actually cause intentional infliction of emotional distress. There's an Oates case, and in the Oates case, the supervisor in the Oates case put a picture of an African-American employee up and made him look like a monkey. Not only did the supervisor put that picture up, but that supervisor refused to remove it. And in that case, the court held that was not enough. This is the Seventh Circuit Court case, held that it was not enough to say that that was intentional infliction of emotional distress and was not truly extreme and outrageous. And that court went on to say that mere insults, indignities, threats, annoyances, or petty oppressions, as well as acts that are inconsiderate, rude, vulgar, uncooperative, unprofessional, unfair, do not constitute conduct which under a theory of emotional distress can sustain. Most significant, Paz admitted in her deposition, if she was really upset by this statement, this alleged statement about abortion, then why didn't she complain? She even admitted that when she came on October 24, 2002, and complained to the administrator about Hispanic discrimination, she never said a word about the abortion statement. Furthermore, when she made the abortion statement, allegedly, that statement was made in August, September 2002, which was several months before October 25th. Once again, there's no contemporaneous statement here. And number two, it was not made by the decision maker. It's uncontroverted that the decision maker was not Charlene Lee. And for those reasons, it's clear as well that there was no intentional infliction of emotional distress. Lastly, the plaintiff admitted in her deposition that she did not see any healthcare professional, no psychiatrist, no psychologist, no mental health care professional when it came to her situation. She said she saw a family doctor almost 2 years later, and she prescribed to her a drug. That was almost 2 years after the alleged termination. During the two-year period, she took no drugs for this situation. And it's clear that if she really was emotionally distraught over this abortion recommendation, or if in fact it was ever made, she would have complained to her administrator about that. But no, she admits she never did complain to the administrator about the abortion comment. Yet she complained to the administrator about being yelled at.
You seem to think there's a duty to complain. I mean, it's odd. You're fired, and you say, well, you should complain to someone. You shouldn't have been fired. Complain to the company. I don't understand. If you're fired by someone who has apparent authority to fire you, why aren't you entitled just to take it? All right, I've been fired.
But, Judge, I hear what you're saying. But at the same time, if you complained to your boss about an issue you had the day before that your supervisor yelled at you and embarrassed you in front of others over burning bacon and serving burnt bacon, wouldn't you then the next day, if you were told by that same supervisor that you were fired, and after the administrator told you that day, if you have any future complaints, you come to me and I'm going to take care of it, and then not go, wouldn't you have gone before that administrator and said, hey, now she tells me I'm fired. Is that true? Is that correct? No, she just walked out the door like she did the previous time before.
That's a good argument before a trier of fact.
Exactly.
Judge Daryagian felt, obviously, in view of the mountain of evidence.
He's not supposed to be the trier of fact in a summary judgment motion. Mm-hmm. You know, you're engaged in a debate you're not going to win. But I admire your courage.
Well, I think there's one more standard that the court could rule in my favor on, which is I don't think that they've established the fourth element of McDonnell Douglas, which is a similarly situated employee. Clearly, Judge Daryagian ruled that there was no evidence.
I don't think you need that if you have direct evidence of discrimination. I don't think you need that.
But again, going back to direct evidence, they clearly did not sustain direct evidence because the statement, even if believed to be so, was not contemporaneous with the termination, and it wasn't made by the decision maker.
You're placing too many restrictions. Mm-hmm. You want to look at the case as a whole, not pick it apart and say this piece of evidence and so on. You want to put it together and see whether there's enough evidence to overcome a summary. We keep saying that, you know, evidence of regarding other discrimination, remarks about other people, remarks made a long time ago and so on, you evaluate them to see whether they have any probative value in the circumstance of this case. Here there's all this talk by her, you know, about the Mexicans and the pregnant women and so on and the firing. You put them all together, you have a pretty strong case.
I think if all the evidence is looked at as a whole, that wouldn't be the case. And I think that...
We will.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. With regard to intentional infliction of emotional distress, last point on that is that the elements were not met for that as well. So if you look at the three causes of action being the discrimination based on Hispanic, based on national origin, retaliation, and as well as the intentional infliction of emotional distress, we don't believe that a cause of action was set forth here. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pogrin. And is there any, Ms. O'Malley, do you have anything further? Okay, well, thank you to Ms. O'Malley and Ms. Coleman and Mr. Pogrin. And move on to our next case, which